Hello. And welcome to the show. So this week is episode 6. As you can see, the buses are going through. We haven't got any red light runners yet. And we've got a... we have a special guest this week. So Stephen's not here. So in his place, I've got my father, Peter. So Peter, do you want to introduce yourself a bit?
Well, in a sense, Hugh has already introduced me. I wasn't going to mention the relationship. All I was going to say was I was a little bit older than he was. My name is Peter. Yeah. He got that right, at least.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, last week I mentioned, this bus weirdly came from the wrong direction. So once we get that, we just bump up that 0 to a 1. So first red light of the day. So Peter or Dad, or I'll try and call you Peter on this. He has been an avid watcher of The Bus Factor. So you've watched it for all the weeks? Or the first week we didn't have the video online afterwards?
I've watched a few of the episodes. And one of the things I noticed is occasionally they miss these ones that run red lights because they're too busy chattering.
Oh, occasionally, yeah. You have caught a couple out. So you saw a few buses and a police car the other week that went through. So we've had one so far. How many do you think are going to run this week?
Well, it's always hard to know. The buses are a variable lot. There's quite a lot of them in Wellington, and therefore it's down to individual drivers. To get here this afternoon, I actually caught a bus from home, and I was quite impressed. The bus driver was extremely polite. He didn't know where I was going, of course, and he said hello, not just to me, but to every passenger that got on.
You do get a few good drivers. Not sure what's happening with this bus. He's got his indicators on. He might be an infamous golden goose, but probably not. Wilton's not really in that direction.
No, I think he might have just forgotten to turn them off.
Yeah, we did have that. Have you seen the Golden Goose before?
I did see that episode, and your obvious excitement about it.
It was something we hadn't seen before. So what do we have on the news? So you had a couple of items you wanted to talk about, and I've got written some up, and we don't have any bus specific news this week, but you were going to talk to us about computers because you have some experience with computers, right?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm somewhat older than Hugh, you see, and so I have had some exposure to computers and a little bit of exposure to security on computers. I wrote my first computer program in 1968, so not quite 50 years ago. And in those days, security was very much, or computer security was very much a lock and key affair. Basically, the computers were room-sized or building-sized, and you had a key, a physical key, in order to get into the building, or into the room at least, in order to utilize them. They weren't networked, and therefore there wasn't the issues that arise these days.
That was before the internet as we know it, wasn't it?
Oh, very much before the internet. In the early 70s, I progressed to a smaller machine, the old machine that I wrote my first program on, and we weren't interested in sort of commercial type things at that stage. It was very much numerical things that we did. Computations, I guess that's why they're called computers.
Yeah.
But in the early 70s, I moved on to other languages like Fortran, which were good at doing numerical analysis and the like. And we did have one little machine, and it was...
How little was this?
Well, it was only a bit bigger than a washing machine. No, twice the size of a washing machine.
I suppose it's reasonably small for the day.
Yeah. And, it was small in terms of what you'd expect now, because it was networked. It had another terminal that was about 500 meters away, if you call that a network.
So how'd the networking work back then? Just serial cable or before that?
Very much serial cable. Yeah. Ethernet had not been invented at that stage.
No Wi-Fi, I'm guessing.
Very much no Wi-Fi. No cell phones, no portable telephones at all.
Yeah.
In fact, the telephone system was quite unlike what we know today. It was based on hardwired phones in houses and businesses, and the end user was not allowed to touch them. You had to get a post office telephone technician in to do any work on them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure some people didn't listen to that and did it themselves.
I'm sure there were some, myself included. I think I'm safe now.
Ooh, are you sure?
Oh, yes.
The law might come after you.
My wife, in our first house, my wife found something wrong with the phone, so she called the telephone technician, and when he came up, he lifted the mat, and under the mat ran a wire, and he cut it.
Oh, naughty.
He thought, we didn't put that there.
Oh, well, at least nothing came by it. Just no phone.
I might add it wasn't the fault that was the problem.
It hardly ever is. So one thing I forgot to mention is our intro song. It's a Creative Commons, PLO Vingabus. Thank you for that. And we'll play it again at the end for you to listen in full. So I guess we could talk about a little something. So what was the top of your list? You had a security-related thing.
You'll have to remind me of the topic that I sent you before.
Oh, I'll just break it up. So DNSSEC.
Yes, apparently they're changing the zone keys.
Yeah, so they're doing a key rollover. Do you know what date that was? We could probably look it up.
October, I think.
Yeah. So do you know what the implications of that might be?
Well, for the general bod, it's no implications at all. What's this orange light?
He's safe. We don't call that red. So technically, they probably ran a red earlier in the intersection. I don't know if you looked at the lights as you came up. But on the other end, they changed to red about 3 seconds before this.
Oh, I see. So so he must have gone through the red to get across the intersection.
Yeah, but because we can only see here, we only go off strict red ones.
So with the key signing, for the average bot out there in the using the internet, it has no problems at all. But it's a principal interest to network operators. But Hugh could probably fill in more detail on this.
Oh, I guess. So some people use DNSSEC. There's not that many, but higher level domains. So the .nz domain is fully signed by DNSSEC. I used to run DNSSEC, but had some issues due to old email servers actually not being able to reply to me, because instead of looking up the MX record, then the A record, they looked up any record and just got all the DNS replies back, and it was over 512 bytes, so I couldn't go over UDP, and the mail server from 20 years ago just didn't switch over to TCP, which is in the standard, but as you can imagine, not every piece of software follows standards to the letter. Apart from that, the DNSSEC, it should happen reasonably smoothly. I would expect the network operators as a whole not having to do too much, because it's meant to just happen seamlessly, as far as I know.
From what I've read, it appears that they've actually had a sort of a testing sessions to ensure that all those high level operators, network operators, have updated their software to deal with the increased key length. I guess that's what we should have said.
Increased key length. It did bump up the key length a bit, didn't it?
Yeah.
So we've got a bit more secure. Should last a bit. Well, I mean, it will last for as long as it lasts, but with increased bit size, it's potentially more secure longer. But yeah, I mean, it's been hanging around till now. So we were on a 2048, and now we're on 4096 bit, I believe. Didn't quite look up this precisely beforehand. The boss just came back in the office, so Peter's introducing himself around. So what would you like to talk about now?
Well, I was going to progress further onto old computers, because they certainly made a difference to my life, you know, sort of 50 years ago when I started writing programs. I used a language called Algol, and many of the younger listeners will appreciate that in computer science courses it will have been mentioned, but never used.
Yeah, I think it came up in my uni studies. Never used it.
But it was the basis for a lot of early languages, and certainly I used that at one stage. But as a numerical analyst, I very much went on to Fortran. And Fortran's still around, whereas Algol is not really around in its original form, at least, or its original name, but it's morphed into a whole bunch of different languages. You went through the Pascal and...
Those cyclists aren't meant to be there.
Oh, I see.
It's a bus-only lane, which is different from a bus lane.
I think there's some leniency taken on those, is there?
Oh, not by the buses. Far from. They'll still try and hit you as much as they would if it's just the normal road.
And this, of course, is a very narrow section of road, so it's... there isn't room to maneuver.
Yeah, not much. Really. Fortran. You still write in Fortran some stuff, don't you?
Yes, Fortran went through a variety of standards. Essentially, back in the 60s, 70s, it was Fortran 4, and then became, well, in the late 60s, Fortran 66, which is pretty much what Fortran 4 was. And then you have Fortran 77 and Fortran 80-something.
I'm guessing those are years.
90. Oh, yes. And there is a current standard in the early 2000s. And so it is kept pace as a modern language, but it's very, very specialized in terms of used by numerical analysts.
Oh, yeah. So what do you think your first program you wrote in Fortran was?
Well, what I wrote was a Fourier analysis program. Now, there's a buzz just gone through an orange.
Just an orange, though. Nothing to get too wound up about. It'll be good once the buses line all the way back up and then they can't even fit.
So my early interest was in Fourier analysis, or signal processing generally. And, of course, since then there's been a lot of developments. I continue to write or run programs. Write and run programs that do signal processing. So it's a specialized area.
Very much so. Did you ever use COBOL? It was a question from our audience.
No, COBOL dates from about the same time and is sort of still in use. There's an awful lot of code out there still in COBOL.
Yeah, quite often in financial institutes and whatnot.
Certainly one of the organizations I worked for, while I was doing the numerical stuff, there are other people doing commercial type computing. Can't really call it computing, it's processing, isn't it?
Yeah.
and they used COBOL. And I had a reading knowledge of it, but I would never sit and down with a blank sheet of paper. And because, in fact, in those days, we did sit down with sheets of paper. We did not have terminals as you know them today.
Yeah. So you just had giant mainframes and punch cards and whatnot. Oh, yeah, he's bringing out his old school punch cards. Yeah. So you would literally punch holes in that piece of card. Pity we don't have this on camera. We can't really. It won't focus.
Yeah, certainly I used punch cards. And we had in our building, there's a two-story building, we had a mainframe and a telephone exchange. That was the whole contents of the building. And then there was a room full of ladies, typically ladies, punching cards for people. And we would then have a stack of cards to feed into these beasts. And because of my position, I was allowed to operate the mainframe. And after the normal work had finished, and in that case, I would be able to sit in front of what would amount to less than the power of a modern PC.
Yeah.
But it occupied a whole room.
And how many punch cards would it take to write a program?
Well, one per line, essentially, and some of the programs, numerical analysis programs that I would have several thousand lines of code.
A lot of punch cards.
A lot of punch cards. But
and now you just use them for note-taking.
That's right. They're my note-taking.
Oh, well. Saves wasting some more paper. You've already got it. So.
And we didn't have network computers, so that came later where we could join into the mainframe remotely. And we then switched to typing them and saving them on disk.
Yeah.
And saving them on magnetic tapes.
Yeah, I suppose disks weren't as cheap as they are now back then.
No, they certainly weren't.
You didn't have much storage space.
No. One of the early computers I had that I used had, this is the IBM mainframe, it had two disk drives, removable disk cartridges, and each one, I think, were 2.5 megabytes.
2.5 megabytes, that's... bit over a floppy disk, but what sort of size were they? Physical size.
They were 14-inch diameter.
That's a fair amount.
That's about 350 millimeters.
Yeah.
I've still got some in the basement, Hugh, at home.
I have seen them before.
And I've still got the drives that they run in.
Yep, I think I've seen one of those in action at some point.
And I've still got the deck computers that you used as a baby.
Yeah? I guess I might have used it as a baby. I can't remember that far back.
When you were three, anyway.
Well, what was your first computer?
What, the one at home or the first one I ever used?
First one you ever used.
It was an Elliott 803.
What year was that?
1968.
That's a few years ago now.
And then we progressed to an IBM 1620 and an IBM 360.
And I suppose you never really had a family computer at home because they just didn't exist?
Not in those days, no. My first home computer was a home-built one, a microprocessor-based one.
Oh, yeah.
About 1980. Or 82 or something like that.
Yeah. We got a computer. Well, we had computers at the house when late 80s at least, I know.
We had DEC PDP 11s prior to that.
Yeah, those big things.
And the children learned to type on the terminals. Because they were networked, networked within the house, and they learned to type command line instructions and none of this graphical stuff.
No such thing as a GUI back then, right?
They were coming in. They were coming in.
Or a web interface or anything you might say. No mobile apps.
And about 1980, there was really no internet.
No, that was sort of coming through in the late 80s, early 90s.
Certainly not in New Zealand.
Yeah. Waikato was the first place with the internet?
That area, the universities, essentially.
Yeah.
And the government research organisations.
Yeah. Oh, that's fairly interesting. It's good to get a bit of history. So what sort of security concerns would you have looked at?
Well,
once networking came into play.
Well, as I said, before the networking came into place, it was very much lock and key and a door, physical security, keeping people out. And certainly at home, even before we had external networking over the internet, I used to use telephone dial-up to bulletin boards and the like.
Yeah.
And that was a way of communicating over a network. And that involved simple logins with passwords, but they were plain text passwords. They weren't saved in a secure manner.
So that was with Telnet or with something earlier than that?
Probably something earlier than that, because it was just a terminal program,
right?
And there were a variety of them around.
Yeah,
but an interesting one is, as a parent, you want to stop your children spending too much time on the computer, and so we did have passwords set to prevent them.
I think we got around those.
Yes, they were known to bribe the babysitters.
Bribe the babysitters, swap the keyboards, a whole lot of things. Or just guess, what's the cat's name this year?
Yeah, and certainly, so we didn't take security as seriously, and the need to do it seriously wasn't as great then as it is now.
Yeah. So I guess that's a good segue to talk about some current world security things. So has anyone heard of this Russian hacker? The guy that was in Russia and developed some tools. Oh, we've just got a very loud computer in the other room. So a Russian hacker developed some tools, and he found out that the Russian government was actually using them for hacking the states. So he turned himself in. So his name, online alias of Profexer. So he found out that Russia was using this in malicious intents against the US, and he turned himself in to the US, and now he works as an informant. Kind of interesting. But it shows to show that not everyone's a bad person, and when they find out governments are doing sort of state-level things, they want to put their foot down and say, no, don't use my tools. Well, I suppose they're still using his tools, but yeah, kind of a bit of an interesting thing that I read recently. What else do I have? So in the cryptocurrency world, there was a ICO, initial coin offering, called Enigma, and it was pretty publicized, but it got hacked before it went live because they just didn't even protect their servers at all. And now a whole bunch of stuff has been stolen, and it cost probably about $500,000 for these people that haven't even got any of their coins. So guts for them. Another thing in cryptocurrency news, the IRS in the good old United States of America have created a tool to track Bitcoin transactions to work out whether people are evading taxes. I'm not sure how well it works, but it is possible to kind of get a decent-ish tool, because Bitcoin's not actually anonymous. It's kind of pseudo-anonymous. If you track it fully, you can work out who's going where. So that's probably a good amount of current news. Shall we go back to some old stuff? Do you have any more interesting stories, Peter?
Well, it depends on interest, you see, in terms of, you know, the audience. What sort of things would they be interested in?
Hard to know. I mean, everyone's in the sort of tech community. One person's in Vienna and watches for the buses. Some people just watch for the buses. Have you ever had any bad bus experiences?
Not dreadfully bad bus experiences. There's a orange light.
Not quite.
Yeah. I generally.
We could put another tag for orange light runners.
Yeah. Oh no, it'd go up too high. but no, with the buses, when I worked in Central Wellington, I used to walk in the morning and walk home at night. And in the 10 years that I was working in Central Wellington, I think I caught the buzz half a dozen to a dozen times in that 10 years.
Was that due to the lack of buses or just preferring to walk?
No, they were more frequent than that. But it was preferring to walk in many ways. But the times I caught it, I always regretted it, because by the time I'd walked from the office to the nearest bus stop and then waited for a buzz, got on, and invariably when I did this, or always when I did this, it was pouring with rain, so yep. It was wet.
Yep.
So you got onto a busload of wet people.
Yeah, and it's not always the most fun.
And then at the other end, you got off and walked. And by the time I got home, I was wet anyway, and I could have actually walked there in about the same time.
Yep.
So that's why I only did it a few times, because, and I'm a slow learner, you see, I'd sort of in 6 months' time, I'd forget.
Yeah. So Stephen and I were talking about bus security just the other day, because I was on a bus. I live up the hill and I catch a bus up every once in a while. And there's this thing in Wellington called Snapper. You don't use Snapper yourself, do you?
No, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't use Snapper.
You've got a fancy card that gets it for free.
Well, limited free.
Yeah, only
restricted.
Off-peak hours or something. But yeah, so I was on the bus and the bus stopped for school kids, and they asked whether they could tap on four times. And the bus driver said, no, can only do two. Which made me think. So Wellington's one of the few cities that I've been to that have a travel card that lets you tap on two people at once. Most cities only let you tap on once and then you walk through a turnstile or something like that. But it made me think, if you're going to make it more than one, why not make it infinite or just a bus full of people? It seemed odd that you couldn't get four. Moral of the story, the bus driver was nice and let two get on for free. And yeah, it was kind of cool. But it made me start thinking about potential other bus security flaws. Snapper is an interesting one, because you can just tap on then tap off at the next stop and the bus driver probably won't notice. Not that I've done it myself, but potentially we could do that on a future live bus factor. Live on the bus, that is. Yeah.
I do now remember I sort of did travel for free on a bus once upon a time.
Illegally?
Well, it's hard to know. This was in Rome. We were visiting Rome, and we got onto the bus. First of all, we had to work out what side of the road to catch it, because there's some issue there of the side of the road they drive on. But we got on the bus, and obviously the bus driver didn't speak English and we didn't speak Italian. It was difficult communicating, to say in the least. And in the end, he just indicated that we should sit down and get off where we wanted to.
Yeah, we actually had an interesting bus story while traveling. So we were in France, and I think it was in Marseille. Probably terrible pronunciation there, but hopefully there's no French listeners. But we were in there and we caught a bus out to some lakes. And then on our way back from the lakes, we decided to catch the same bus just in reverse because we assumed it would go back to the city. Turns out it just drives around the city, then goes way over the other end of the city. And then we were like, are you going back to the city? And pointing to the map, and the driver was like, no, this is like the end of the stop. You have to get off here. But in French, and we were like, oh, okay. In the end, he was a bit nice to us and drove us a bit of the way back because the depot was about halfway, and we ended up having to walk about 5K to get back to the town. But we found it really odd that the two sides of the route was different, because you would expect a bus to go from point A to B, then point B to A, but this one was point A to B, then point B to C, then something else. Who knows? But yeah, traveling on buses, especially in a foreign tongue, is quite interesting. It's interesting you said before you caught the bus down and your driver was quite polite. Yeah. Now, I find some bus drivers are quite polite here.
Well, certainly I thought so today. He didn't have a huge number of people on the bus, so I guess it's easier to be polite to a few than to crowds of people.
Yeah.
But he greeted each one as they got on.
So comparing to my childhood in Wellington, where I caught buses, I found that the majority of the bus drivers were quite polite back then, but now it seems quite the opposite. In my experience, I catch buses fairly regularly. Even today, I bused to the other end of town to get lunch with a friend, and some tourists got on the bus, and they were like, oh, can we pay for two people? Expecting it to be just one fare, like a lot of countries do. And the driver just started yelling at them, like, where are you going? And they're like, oh, I don't know, like, well, something. Turns out they were going to Wilton, but the driver just kept on yelling at them, where are you going? You need to tell me where you're going, otherwise I can't let you on. And then worked out it's Wilton, which is just the end of the line. And it seemed quite abrupt and rude to me, but oh well.
But surely this boils down to the individuals.
Yeah, so individual bus drivers are to blame here. Just on the whole, it might be a bit of generalizing, I guess. But I have noticed there is a more negative trend now than compared to when I was a kid. I don't know whether that's because I've grown old and start shaking my stick at people and tell them to get off my lawn, but I do find that these days, majority of bus drivers are quite rude, but there are some good ones. I, for one, thank every bus driver getting off the bus and tell them have a good day, even if they're very rude to me as I get on the bus or do something.
But that is one thing I've noticed on the Wellington buses, is a large number of people do say thank you to the bus driver as they get off.
Yeah, I think it's good to be polite both ways. So it's easier for the customers of the bus, because there's a lot more of them compared to the driver. If everyone just gets together and just says thank you, it's an easy thing to say. Some people might not mean it, but majority probably will. And it just makes for a friendlier environment, because people do use buses to get round for work or for pleasure or whatever.
Tell me, Hugh, in just standing here and watching the buses go by, so to speak,
yeah,
is this a slow bus day?
This is quite a slow bus day. So some weeks we get lots and some we don't, as I'm sure you've seen with our previous shows, but yeah, this one is looking quite slow. So there's a kind of regular stream, but I do note we've only got one red light runner.
So it may be an opportune time to move on to other topics. Is there other topics that you wish to cover?
So I've got a couple of topics. One I found kind of ironic. So if any of our listeners any of our New Zealand listeners use an app called Neighbourly, it's like a phone app that lets you get in touch with your neighbours in a sort of widespread way. It's kind of weird. I signed up to it once I moved house because people were talking about it. But last night I got a private message from someone. I can probably bring it up from who it was precisely. That one. Sean Lyons. Now, he is the director of outreach from NetSafe. Now, he sent me quite a large private message about what to do if you get spam. Now, to me, spam is exactly what he sent me. It's a strange message. So if I receive spam like that, I should report it to NetSafe. Now, once I got one, I didn't really care too much about it, just ignored it. But then a couple of hours later, I got an identical message from the same person, which I found quite ironic, or, yeah, I don't know the word, but found it reasonably odd that the person that's trying to advocate not having spam was sending spam.
Was he aware of it?
I'm not too sure. My fiance Adele, she also got two messages from him and also thought it was kind of weird. Yeah. So I guess that's kind of interesting. I could report it to NetSafe.
Have I done something wrong? Because I'm not getting them.
You're probably not on Neighbourly.
That would be true.
You could ask Jane. I think she's on Neighbourly. As for other news, so recently Android has released a new major update. So they're on Android 8. And the key word for this one, oh, that was the right tab, is Oreo. So they name it after snacks, I guess. So we had jelly bean and ice cream sandwich and marshmallow. So Android 8.0 Oreo. So that's been released.
Because Android is mainly used on phones, isn't it?
Yeah, so phones, some tablets, and you do get some computers that run it, but not often.
Yeah, but when they release a new one, of course, all these people with older devices, phones or tablets,
don't get it.
They don't get it because they're all tailored by the individual device manufacturer, aren't they?
Yeah, most definitely. So this one, so Android has a different ecosystem to, say, Apple with iOS devices, where they all control the hardware as well as the software. So they do quite well. Whereas Android, there's a lot of different devices out there and a lot of different manufacturers, and they all run their own bundled systems. So this Android 8 will only really hit the Google phones to start with. So that's the Pixel and the Nexus 5X and 6P. And after that, as Peter says, it'll start trickling down to other manufacturers and more phones will see it.
But these will all be new devices, I presume.
Yeah, so those are new devices. Mine might get it because it's reasonably modern. It's only a year old, but some might not. I think he's looking at the crack in my screen. So
I was thinking, does it need replacing soon?
So
And is this the case that, you know, these devices don't last as long?
Well, no, that it actually cracked. I had it on my bike handlebar cam holder mount thing. I call it a dash cam, but it's really a handlebar cam. But phone mount, going at about 40k an hour, changing lanes, phone fell off, completely shattered. And I kept it like that for a bit. And then I replaced the screen, and while I was replacing it, it got a new crack. So I'll wait a bit longer and then do another job.
It does bring me to a comment about durability and, you know, my experience with older machines.
They
just work and they continue to work.
You could probably throw a sledgehammer at them and they'd still work.
Well, I wouldn't do that generally. I wouldn't want to try because they're becoming rarity value. I've got some old gear in my basement that dates from the early 70s. So how long ago is that? You know, more than 40 years, and it still functions.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised, to be honest. They say in the nuclear bunkers in the States, they just have computers from the 70s because they still work.
Well,
they have security issues, but they're aware of them. And They're happy with the risk.
And that is the case with a lot of old industrial and scientific and medical equipment. They run on old equipment, and some have got locked into them such products as, say, Microsoft Windows.
Oh, wow. Well, this could be it. So this Turner, I would call that a red. Stephen might not, but he's not here. And we're quite low on the count today. We'll call that a two.
Yeah, we can call that a two.
Because his line's slightly further forward when they're turning around.
So they queue in a different lane.
Yeah, so they sometimes queue in a different lane. You can see when a turn is coming, when the bus is coming towards us.
Slow down.
Slow down or stop or flash some lights. Some weeks we have the camera angled more down. We can kind of tilt it with this, but nah, we probably need a remount camera.
Yeah. Or put a big mirror across the road.
Oh, we could. I mean, we think the buses can see us. Because we're kind of standing here. So last week we did it dark to try and avoid buses being able to see in. But when Stephen went for a walk, he just saw two silhouettes. So
well, when I went for a walk earlier, looking up here, it sort of wasn't really visible.
It's hard to see, but when
it depends on the ambient light.
Yeah, if it's darker. It's actually quite light out at the moment. Interesting for the time.
Well, the shortest day has finished.
There's two of them.
Oh, they were both on red lights.
Might be a third? No, just two. You sometimes get a backup after some turners where if the bus doesn't fully go on the right lane to turn, then there's some waiting behind them.
And they rush it through.
They do rush through. So it was quite slow, but it seems to be going a bit faster now that we're past the halfway mark, I guess. So some things you mentioned to me earlier, you were going to talk about IoT devices.
Well, IoT devices. Internet of Things.
Anything.
And these are where your washing machine or your toaster or some
other
innocuous device has built into it a little processor and possibly Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And so it's connected through to a network, and depending on how the connection goes, it almost inevitably is connected through to the wider internet.
Yeah.
And as such,
makes it handy. Someone, I can turn my heating on before I get home. Or
But even worse, someone else can turn your heating on.
Definitely.
They can boil your kettle until it's dry.
There was something in the news a couple of years about kettles. It was more in the UK because it was quite popular there. But yeah, people were boiling all their neighbors' kettles. I found it amusing. But yeah.
But there are potential risks, and this is very much a security issue. And from what I have read, it appears that manufacturers build in a password or some sort of security blocking, but it's built in and so commonly known. So literally it's available to anyone to use.
Yeah, anyone can kind of use that back door and get its way out. Oh, there's a guy in Fleur down there. Could be important. Might not be. So what IoT devices do you have?
Well, I'm not
sure.
There's
a duck there. There's the car going forward. Oh, he's stopped. Oh, this could be good. So there's a blockage of buses back there.
Mm.
But you couldn't really see it. Yeah.
Well, I don't consciously have any IoT devices.
Oh, yeah. But you tinker around with them a bit?
Well, I tinker around with little processors and do things, but not seriously enough to become a security risk.
Yeah.
Certainly my toaster is old-fashioned and I have to push the knob down.
Oh,
and the kettle I have to fill up with water. And
how can you even handle doing that?
Well, I can remember.
We don't actually have a kettle. We have to use the pot to do it. should get one at some point, but we don't really drink hot drinks.
Mm. So what IoT devices do you have in your household? I suppose the washing machine isn't connected.
No, we don't really have too much in our house. I've got a lot of gadgets. Probably the only thing that actually connects out is the Chromecast, but I wouldn't really call that an IoT. Well, I suppose it's a thing and it's got internet on it.
But it's wired in, is it? Plugged in? Or at least Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi, yeah. So it's not like the Bluetooth low energy network. Yeah, that's the one. It's not that sort of connection. But
my comment about IoT things was basically just to highlight the security issues, the fact that there are security issues.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Rather than advocating that they're a good thing.
Yeah.
But they're certainly becoming more prevalent. And I think the general bod out there that would have these devices in their household possibly aren't too concerned about security.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem.
One of my old workmates, he got a heater that he could turn on before he got home, and I showed a bit of interest in it, and he was like, oh, I don't think you could turn it on without me like letting you. And I was like, yeah, I probably could. So he told me his IP and that's it, and got some sweet heating action going at his house. He was a bit surprised, but I told him the mode to sort of tweak it a bit. Doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's locked down by default.
But presumably he had some technical competence that he could adjust it, whereas perhaps the vast majority of people don't.
A lot of, it's this whole smart home thing happening. A lot of people are turning into that. And that's where you see a lot of these IoT devices that could potentially be quite dangerous.
Yeah.
Turning on an oven, as soon as someone leaves for work and your house might burn down.
Yeah, I don't think it's reached very high proportions in New Zealand yet.
No, not yet.
But from what I read in the States, it's not in the average house, but it's certainly more prevalent there.
Yeah. So how much time we got? We got another 10 minutes. Do you have any more war stories, so to speak?
Well, depends on what you talk about, war stories.
Or would you want to talk about, you recently read something on the Register, didn't you?
Just trying to think. I've read a lot of things. There was an article recently about corporate security and should you have it in-house or should you outsource it? And the comment was made that, in fact, you need that expertise and you can't have the complete expertise within your own organization, so that you really need to outsource.
Yeah. I think for most companies that would be definitely a thing you need to do. I've dealt with people that think they can just do it all in-house, but then they have a lot of stuff wrong.
But this also extended to, smaller organizations which would outsource, say, their email to the likes of Microsoft or to Google or whatever.
Yeah.
And think, they look after everything. But in fact, while they do look after everything on behalf of themselves, to ensure their network is right, they may not, in fact, be the optimum in terms of security for each little organization.
Yeah.
And they still have to look after their own and possibly outsource because they don't have in-house expertise.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you get into that sort of thing here?
Outsourcing security. I think by definition, I work in a pen testing company, so I'm...
You're providing the expertise.
Yeah, so we don't outsource our security needs, but people come to us for their outsourcing need. Hopefully some more buses run through. What else could we talk about? Don't really have too much more on my list. Oh, there's one more thing, but that's not really.
The other thing you tried the other day was to glue a coin down.
Oh, yeah.
And I went for a walk out there earlier on.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, should I get some glue and glue a dollar or whatever?
Oh, we've got glue here somewhere.
Yeah, you've got to have the right glue because looking at the last episode where you did that,
came off fairly easy.
It seemed to lift very easily. When I have glued...
you know it's actually illegal to glue coins.
To deface the...
deface the currency, deface the coin.
To deface the national coin, whatever.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, people do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've never actually done it before. I've seen other people do it, but this was the first time for me.
I think we did one out by the front gate once upon a time.
Ooh.
Must have been when you were very little.
Very rebellious of you.
Well,
there's no buses this cycle.
Well, it's a very slow bus day.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it stayed there for weeks, but it did disappear in the end.
Yeah. Ah, someone will come back with the
with a hammer and chisel.
Yeah, appropriate tools or adhesives, whatnot adhesives. Yeah. Anti-adhesives, I guess you could say.
So you didn't have another one in mind?
No, we might do that another week, but we were thinking of doing something different every week. I don't know, it's hard enough just to do it every week.
So for next week?
Next week, how are you going? So next week I won't actually be here, but Stephen will be running the ship there, and potentially we will have a guest speaker like yourself co-hosting with him. We've got a new person in the office that showed some interest, but we'll see what happens.
That sounds very hopeful.
Yeah. Well, we've been going strong. So this was episode 6, and we've got some listeners, and... yeah, I think we're doing all right.
And the audience have any requests?
I haven't actually checked the chat today. Haven't checked the chat. I guess the audience has mentioned stuff previously in the chat. Struggling to find the chat here. Twitch is very slow sometimes. We've got some buses back again. But yeah, we are getting a website, and we're going to get a Patreon page, which allows people to donate and ask for more features or something like that.
In terms of Buzzroots, this particular street seems to figure fairly highly in the...
It catches most of the buses. So if we were one block back, we would catch even more because there's the ones that come down from Brooklyn. So the ones that are turning up here, they're going to Brooklyn.
Because of the one-way streets.
Yeah, the Willis one will catch all the ones going to Brooklyn and from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But yeah, majority... So they call this the Golden Mile because the Go Wellington buses were yellow and... they were basically the only ones there. But as you can see, there's a lot of different colour buses at the moment. So some of them are different local companies and some of them are just loaned buses from other cities because we've got more buses than we ever had before. So not another one there. So I guess, do you have anything more that you want to say?
Not at this stage. I don't think anything springs to my mind.
I guess we could potentially end the show there. It's been about an hour. We've talked about some stuff, and hopefully our listeners like it.
And you won't forget the tune.
Yeah. So this, we have the Venga Bus, which is our theme song by PLO. It's a Creative Commons. So we'll just let that play in the background.